Hey, you guys, welcome to another episode of the Mentally Chill podcast. Never mind, it's Kristen and Chill. Wow, I screwed up. You are programmed in your brain to do the same thing over and over, and that's what that was. I'm trying to reprogram my brain. And actually, I've been reprogramming my brain, and I think I might have mentioned this, but by doing headstands, like crazy amounts of headstands. I know it sounds really weird, but it's my new obsession. Before, I used to nap when I was feeling down or when I wanted to procrastinate. Now I do headstands. I still nap occasionally. I haven't crossed over to the awful side completely, but do a headstand. See if you can do a headstand. It feels really good. On this week's episode of Kristen and Chill, I have my friends Molly Harper and Jason Romaine, and I ironically seem to have a lot of friends, even though I talk about how I have no friends. But Jason and Molly are both really funny comedians. You can find Jason on his website at jasonromaine.com. You should watch his web series called Soho House Rules. And Molly, she doesn't have social media going yet because she's just getting back into comedy. But they're lovely. They're funny. In this week's episode, we discuss everything from beauty and how it's not totally satisfying, actually, surprisingly, to how if you're texting someone, you shouldn't just call them in the middle of the texting and trap them. Anyway, all this and more coming up on this week's episode of Kristen and Chill. If you want to subscribe, please do so. And if you want to support the show on Patreon, I'm on Patreon at patreon.com/mentallychill. Shout out to Trevor, my newest Patreon cult member. It's still a cult, even though the show has changed. It's definitely a cult. Always a cult. Once a cult, always a cult. I think that's a rule of cults. You can't go back on culting because then what was the cult to begin with? Oh, and also, Uncle Tony, he's not just chatting with me, he's chatting with you guys. So if anyone has a question for Uncle Tony that you'd like him to answer at the end of the show, please email it to me at contact@kristenandchillpodcast.com. That's contact@kristenandchillpodcast.com, and have Tony rough you up a little bit. Anyway, enjoy the show. So we're going to start with socially challenged, and I'm going to sit like this so that I'm so natural.
So casual.
I have my feet up.
It's California. Cool. You're looking very relaxed. Diane Keaton on the cover of Architectural Digest.
If my mom heard you call me Diane Keaton, she would love you so much.
Oh, my God.
Diane Keaton is her goddess.
That's my goddess.
Really?
I for not being a trans person, I want to be Diane Keaton.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe I am trans because I want to be her.
Do you feel like inside you are her?
Sometimes. I have modeled my apartment off the house and Something's Gotta Give.
No.
And honestly, I think like I'm also obsessed with Nancy Myers, the director of Something's Gotta Give. And I feel like Nancy and Diane need to have a contest for people who spent under 10 grand on their home. So people like me who are lower class living in apartments who have copied that style, and whoever wins gets to have like lunch with them at the
apartment.
That
sounds like a good HGTV.
This is my way to stalk them.
You're like a 60-year-old lesbian trapped in a 30-something man's body.
I want to find a way to like, you know, have them sort of stalk me. I stalked them. Now it's time for them to stalk me.
Love that. I do think that would be a good HGTV show where like there's a celebrity home or this home that people have to emulate for under X amount of dollars.
Yeah.
You guys should pitch that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, because I buy.
Well, I mean,
shows.
And the sad thing is, the Something's Gotta Give house was just on the Sony backlot in Los Angeles. It's not even a real house. But I have a fantasy if I would ever make enough money, I'd want to build a replica of that house in the Hamptons.
All right, this is stuff you should definitely tell your therapist. So maybe we should start with things I should tell my therapist.
I want to live in that movie. It's really mentally ill.
I've never seen it.
Okay, I'm done.
Something's Gotta Give?
You've never, like, do you not watch cable? It's on TBS all the time.
I consider myself the type of person who sees the movies everyone sees. But there's those random ones where
I am a
weirdo.
You've never even seen a scene from it.
No. Because
it is literally on not pay cable, basic cable, once a day, if not twice a day.
Right now I want you to say to me, Something's Gotta Give with you, because you should see this movie.
Yeah, I'm saying
get it?
Something.
Like Something's Gotta Give. Like,
oh, yeah. Something's Gotta Give with you.
With me.
Yeah, gotcha.
I have no idea what it's even about, but okay.
You and I need to have a play date.
Okay.
Molly, you can come if you want.
I love the movie. I love it.
But
you love that movie?
No, here's what's actually interesting about that movie.
I'm a little shattered right now because I didn't know that the house was on a back lot. And
they filmed all the interiors at the Sony back lot. And then they went and they used a huge mansion in the Hamptons just to do the front exteriors. Even the pool in the back. It's all Sony back lot.
So I'm going to talk to my therapist about why I'm okay with letting this conversation drag on my own podcast, because I really want it to stay on topic. And I'm like, no, just let it keep going. Be nice. I'm too nice sometimes. So let's get to non-movies, even though I could talk about that like all day.
Yeah.
stuff we would tell our therapist, since you seem like obsessed with living in a world that's not real. Mm-hmm. I know that's not what you have written down for what you tell your therapist. So we'll talk about that, but then also what you have written down.
So the first topic is living in a world that's not real.
Which I get.
I think part of the reason people come to Hollywood is for that. And that's what makes Hollywood really hard for people, is I think lots of people lived very beige lives, or lives that they had, you know, for me, like I didn't feel like I was able to be out, all these things. And you buy into the illusion of Hollywood, which has a lot of imagery that seduces you but can also destroy you. Mm-hmm. So sorry, we just got really deep.
No,
really deep.
But, we can still go deep as long as yeah. we throw in Sex and the City references and keep it a little shallow.
Wonderful.
I'm fine with that.
And I think that's part of the reason something's got to give aside. I really take pride in my apartment. It's like the only place I feel like I can control and I can fake look successful.
Absolutely. Okay. So I'm going to completely relate with you on this. When I was younger, I would look at magazines and think that's what the future looks like for my life. And then I fell into a deep depression. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, when life didn't look like a movie or a magazine. Because I had these,
I have the same issue. Go on. Sorry.
It really deeply, deeply affected me. And it took me a long time to accept that life doesn't look like what the fantasy in my mind is. And I've always wanted to live in a movie or in somewhere that feels grander than life. And when I was little, I had this like vision that I would always have when I was closing my eyes. Not like every time, but I had it on repeat. And I told my mom about it a lot. And she'd kind of ask me about it. But I'd say I close my eyes and I'm from the middle of nowhere. There's the classiest thing that we have is a gun factory in my town.
Where's this? It's upstate New York.
Upstate
correct?
New York, okay. Like way upstate.
And I'm from Wheeling, West Virginia. So I get it.
So you get
and
it. Okay.
I think I top you by
West Virginia. You top everybody. Like he's taking a picture of me and I'm really dumb. But yes. Yeah, so
I don't top everyone depending on who's
I've
out
been
there.
To West Virginia. I can, you I trump everybody. No, like it's bad. Yes, because my family drove. My dad hated flying. He still does, but he would not fly. And we had to go to a wedding in Atlanta. So we drove the family Oldsmobile to Atlanta from upstate New York and hit a deer in West Virginia. And it fucked up the car. And so it was like, and we were driving late. It was like 11:30 or 12 at night or something. I was 8, you know, wow. My brother and sister were like early teens. And the car basically like wouldn't run. And so we were stuck in the middle of nowhere. And the scariest West Virginia people were like helping us, but they weren't like
probably
in a
family.
Lovely. Yeah. I think
the
it was the last,
he was hiding
the last name was Romaine, I think.
No, well, you almost hit a deer every night in West Virginia. So you get very good. And you know, they travel in packs. So if you see one, you slow all the way down because there's going to be three or four.
Yeah. That's that. Like that in upstate New York too. Yeah. There's my dad actually hit a deer last week, and my mom, they're such like the old married couple. My dad has hit 5 deer in his life, and my mom blames him every single time. Like, you could have avoided that deer. This deer that they just hit ran into the side of the car. It wasn't in the front. So the deer basically ran into the car. So my dad, there's no way he could avoid that.
No.
But it's an ongoing saga where like my mom's like, well, most people on average hit 2 deer in their lifetime. Your father, he's hit 5. And I'm telling you, if I was driving, I would have seen the deer. And she's like, well, I might have not missed it, but I would have seen it. It's just like an ongoing thing. So there are deer always. So the first one, though, in my life was in West Virginia. Yeah. And it was like this scary car mechanic-y place at like midnight. It was just very eerie. So you guys did scare me.
I'm with your mom. It's still, you feel like it's your fault. And actually, not to brag, but my parents once bought me a used Sebring convertible.
Oh my God.
And
what fantasies are made of.
Yes. And my brother.
It's called the like, Golden Boy.
Yes. I called it the Golden Boy.
Named after yourself.
Yes. And my brother wanted to take it out the first week I had it before he went back to college. He was, I think, a senior in college and I was a sophomore. Whatever. And I said no,
bragging,
but it was a big
college.
Thing for me to say no to my brother because I'm codependent. I'm the youngest and you're supposed to just give in to all the requests at my family. But I said no, and he ended up hitting a deer that night. And I was very, it was a good lesson
in
for
a
me.
Different
always
car?
In his car. So it was a good lesson, say no, because other people ruin everything.
Yes.
That's what I've learned about life.
But I wonder.
That should be the name of your book, by the way.
It will be. Nobody steal it. That.
Yeah. But I always wondered the butterfly effect of like, if you said yes, maybe he would have left at a different time and then wouldn't made contact with that deer.
He's still alive, so let's not go
okay.
there.
Okay. It's not that big of a deal. But so what have you done to cope with this idea of not living in a movie world or a fantasy world.
It is, all you can do is be aware of it. I feel like I've, you know, gone, when I go through harder times, I have to make the other things I have beautiful. So it's like, and it's not that I'm overspending all the time.
I'm
but
so excited to stay in your place, by the way.
It's very,
it's
very pretty.
Very cute.
I'm a Crate and Barrel addict. What's made me stop is all the workers there know me. So I have to go to different Crate and Barrels because like they just have gotten too comfortable with me. And I hate that.
Well, describe what too comfortable.
Well,
yeah,
one
Carol,
of them,
I'm curious
one of them
is
like secret, mean, sort of like she sort of snaps at me. If like she's handling, she's like, well, send me to another counter. And then some of them are very nice, but I hate when a store person acknowledges that you're coming there a lot because it makes you really self-conscious.
Yes.
I have this at World Market too.
That's the thing in Sex and the City when Miranda calls for the Chinese food. And
it's very similar to that, to bring it back to Sex and the City.
I don't understand why they wouldn't be excited that you're there at your frequent shopper.
Because here's my thing, and I felt this when I used to write at the Coffee Bean every day. It's not that.
Okay.
People at these jobs, myself included when I waited tables, you're basically in prison. Nobody wants to be visited at prison too much. And if you visit somebody at prison too much, it starts to feel like you're mocking them. And I'm coming in buying overpriced glasses and shit. You know, nobody wants to see
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they get a little jealous. I absolutely can get what you're saying.
I don't think it's that. Well, it's all of it. I think they just are, you're reminded how much your life sucks when somebody visits you too much at a service job.
I'm glad that you brought that up because later in the show when we talk about Sweat the Small Stuff, I was going to talk about something to do with retail employees.
Great. Well, we'll get back to that.
So later we will transition. Great. So basically you're saying you have to be aware of knowing that you cannot live in a perfect world all the time and have to,
I can enjoy it, but I can't get too anxious about it. But at the same time, I deserve to have rules like no dogs on my carpet, no shoes on my car. So I have, not to brag again, but an Afghani rug that I'm obsessed with. It's a desert rug, no pile.
Well, I hear you also have Turkish towels.
Yes, I'm obsessed with Turkish cottons, people. Until you go and buy Turkish linens and cottons in Istanbul, you haven't lived. Because these Turkish cottons are everything. And they're not that expensive.
Most people will never live then.
Buy them on Etsy.
Oh yeah, Etsy, amazing.
Well, no, my point was that I'm better than everyone. So even if you buy them on Etsy, you're just not living what I call the romaine house life.
Oh my, amazing.
But no, so it's okay to have rules, but you also need to enjoy things. So I just had people over last week. I put my rug under my bed when I have people over and I'm serving red wine because my rug is really the only thing I'm obsessed with. Everything else, if it gets a little patina, you know, that's the word you need to use when people fuck up.
What's
your shit?
Patina
is wear and tear.
Oh.
The way you get over it as somebody who's mentally ill is you just say, well, that's added patina.
Oh, okay. I don't think I could get over that.
But I don't want more.
Yeah,
I don't want more patina on my rug. I don't want more patina on my rug. It has enough patina.
I'm about to have a lot of patina up in here with a baby. I'm a little nervous.
Oh my god.
Yeah, babies.
I'm gonna have to cover everything in towels.
Patina.
Yeah,
babies are 100% patina.
Oh no, god,
you should name her patina.
I never knew that word. That's so funny.
That's the way you sell something that's damaged. I've learned that.
He's good at that too.
I'm good on Craigslist. Yeah. So you say, you know, with added patina,
and people know what that means. Or do you have to tell them?
No, they do. They know,
Google
Krista.
It, but it sounds kind of sexy.
In this
I didn't
world,
know it was a real world. Oh, yes. So you made up this word, or you
no,
did not make up this
word?
This is a
real word.
I thought you were just like naming it, like branding.
No,
smart,
this is
like,
real.
Let's say I want to sell, because eventually I do want to sell that. If I wanted to sell this like table thing that I have on Craigslist, I could say has some patina. That sounds a lot better than has some scratches.
Yeah, or wear and tear.
I would think you meant has some feminine Canadian French fries with gravy on them.
That's poutine. Feminine French fries.
Poutina.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, I'm bilingual. Yeah. So.
No, but back to just the original thing. Yeah, you just have to be careful of it. But I have noticed that that's part of my healing when things don't go my way in the real world is to surround myself with beauty. That does not mean it has to be expensive.
That's why you're here right now with me and Molly.
Exactly.
Total
two
beauty.
Two beauties.
Surrounded. Yeah,
Molly's place is full of beauty. It's
I
very
love
cozy.
Molly's apartment.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's got a good feng shui-ish type of thing, even though I don't totally know what that means. But for me, with the same issue, I've had to just really lower my standards and accept that life isn't always going to be what I imagined it to be, because when I live like that, I get really depressed because I don't have any extra money to like decorate my world to make it look like a magazine. I keep things super neat and orderly and try to make it look as much as I can, But I've had to lower my standards and just say, this is what I can do for now. And the more energy I put toward feeling bad about it, the further away I'll even get from ever getting it.
That's smart.
Yeah.
So I try to give myself positive self-talk. I have the desk in my room right now is horrific. It's old, but it's not antique chic old. Mm-hmm. And it's not new enough to look modern. You know, it's just this in between like 1990s. Like, what is this? Yes. And I want to burn it. But I'm just being patient.
The bottom line is beauty can enhance happiness. Beauty is not happiness.
Right.
So some of the happiest times of my life were spent in a studio apartment when I was 23 and I had a 13-inch TV on a box. I put it on a box of like my cheap glassware from Ross.
That.
It sat on that box for 2 years because I didn't have the money. I mean, honestly, like $100 to me then was like, oh my God, I'm rich.
Yeah.
Like, I was so poor.
Yeah. Isn't it when like someone says to you, here, I'll give you $100. You're like, oh, it's not a lot of money. But if you have to give someone $100, you're like, oh, that's a lot of money.
So true.
Nowadays, but in my 20s, oh my gosh, like if somebody gave me $100, it was like I almost started crying. But yeah, so I think, you know, beauty is just a byproduct that when it's there, it's great, but it can't bring you something you don't already have.
Well, and it will be like false happiness.
I kind of wanted to weigh on this because you said like you've compared, you know, you've kind of emulated magazines or movies or whatever to make your home beautiful. And it kind of takes me back to like, I remember I grew up reading like 17 magazine and all those beauty magazines like Cosmo and Glamour and whatever. And I would read them and aspire to look like the girls in them. And so then I would go buy the beauty products and the hair products and all that stuff, right? And then I remember after a time, it started to make me feel depressed reading those magazines because it was a constant comparison.
Yeah.
So I stopped altogether.
That's like the death of you is comparison.
Comparison. And then also like just trying to look like these girls in these magazines. Like I remember one of them had black hair and blue eyes and pale skin. And I was like, well, I have blue eyes and pale skin and my hair's almost black, so I'll dye it black. And I went and bought black dye and dyed my hair black. And then it turned out to be a $300 disaster trying to get my hair straight.
And, you know, Drew Barrymore owes you money because you did the Drew Barrymore eyebrows. Remember that?
I did do the Drew Barrymore eyebrows.
Drew Barrymore fucked a lot of people up. So, Drew, if you're listening, we're coming after the social
when
media
mob.
When
she had the really thin eyebrows, I tweezed mine to like pencils. They're still not in.
One of my proudest things in life, I don't naturally have thick eyebrows, but ever since I was like 12 years old, I've loved thick eyebrows. Even when the thin was in, I was like, ew, ew, ew. My sister had the thickest, most beautiful eyebrows and she plucked them to a line and they've never grown back.
Same here.
And it's like travesty, but I never fell for that. I had thinner eyebrows, so I had to wear them thin until I learned how to like make them look thicker.
Yeah.
Just a PSA for people suffering from this, massage your eyebrows once a day. The more you massage any part of your body where you want hair to grow, hair will grow. You have to
That's
tend
how I grew
to these
in
areas.
Hair.
You have to, exactly. Me too, my friend.
That's the best ever.
Molly, so it's about this magazine thing, you know how you used to have like imaginations of what you would do if you were famous? And now I realize nobody gives a fuck about me and this will never happen. But I've always had a dream that like one celebrity should just refuse to ever do a magazine cover because magazines, and nowadays I guess it's moved on to social media and Instagram, but for us, magazines were like, they really were one of the most toxic things that ever came about because of all the things you're saying. And I felt the same way. And, you know, funny enough, like I used to be like, well, I'm not tall enough. And that's why I don't look like Brad Pitt or Matt Damon or whoever those people were 20 years ago. And then what I finally realized about 10 years ago, I'm like, well, I'm attractive enough. But the thing was, all their clothes were tailored. And we were wearing these baggy things in the late 90s.
Right.
None of us looked attractive. Tailoring solves everything, not the magazines.
Yeah. There were JNCO jeans in our reality. There's no way we could compete with what they looked like. Yeah. But luckily for me, I had so zero interest in ever reading that even magazines, I was like, no, thanks.
Well,
too
I just
kind of
looked at the pictures and read the beauty
photos.
Tips.
But I would flip through for pictures, but I would never be like, oh, what's this product? I need to go buy it.
Well, that's the thing. I did, and then I stopped doing it in maybe 2006. I was like, no more beauty magazines, no more girly magazines. I'm done. And then I was like, okay, I feel
so much
better.
And then Instagram came in.
But then I started looking at pictures of myself. And I was like, no.
I need it.
I need those magazines because they kind of kept me in check.
Yeah, there's a balance. Everything's a balance.
I think the hard thing is nobody else you realize nobody else has the answers to solve you, be it your beauty issues, your mental issues, whatever the issues are. But then you're in a weird place for lots of your life where you're like, but I don't know the answer either. And you just realize nobody knows anything, but that can be very depressing.
Yeah. The only people who should know things are pilots and surgeons. Everyone else can just like bullshit their way through.
And well, hairdressers.
And hairdressers. Oh my God. That's why my hair is down to my knees right now, because no one can cut my hair right.
Anyone cut it.
No one can cut it right. And so I don't want to go through the mental distress. This is a thing I could tell my therapist. I will not let someone touch my hair because the amount of trauma, my level of trauma when I get my hair cut is equal to that of someone over in Afghanistan who just witnessed their comrade lose their leg.
Okay, so that's how traumatic. That is an example of white privilege.
Total white privilege. First
that's
world
what you
problems.
Tell your therapist.
But it's like the damage. So for
You cry.
I cry, and for a month or two, I'm deeply upset and
but
depressed.
You, all three of us have faces that cannot be ruined by a haircut. So get over it.
No, see, that's the thing.
That's one of those
that's
things.
That's what's bad about haircuts is they can't give you a new face.
You know what, Kristen? Here's the thing. And this is where I am at 37. I'm just ready to tell people to get the fuck over it when they bring up like this. So I'm telling you as your therapist, get the fuck over
well,
it.
Well, you will love
you're
Tony.
Pretty. Your hair looks good. You've always looked good.
Well, it's at the end of the show, we have Tough Love with my Uncle Tony. And he's basically telling us what you just said, which is just shut the fuck up,
get
over
it. Get
the
fuck over it,
So you and Tony should be besties. Mm-hmm. And it's healthy. We need that. I need that. I cry over my hair for a month.
It's not normal.
I need to be better inside so that when I'm faced with hair drama, I can handle it in a sophisticated, dignitied way of
dignified.
Like, dignified.
Yes.
Well, what's funny about it is all you need
I just
is
lost
a trim.
All my dignity by saying dignity.
Dignity. You just need a trim. It's no big deal. It's like an inch.
They fuck up trims. No one's touched my hair in over a year. But
you haven't cut your hair in over a year?
Well over a year. And the girl who cut it stopped doing clients. She's only doing shoots. So the one girl I trusted no longer does it. And so I'm like, ugh. But anyway, okay, let's talk about what you would tell your therapist, Molly.
I'd probably tell her that I feel bad that I talk about people sometimes.
But gossip's fun. And that's why you love Real Housewives.
I think I do.
Yeah.
I relate to them in that horrible way.
But it's fun to talk shit about them also. Like, did you see the way Ramona did this and da-da-da? It's fun. There's people who say you shouldn't talk about other people, I can't trust.
Well, like, what else there's do I have to talk about? You already know what's going on. Like, what else do I have to say?
Right. But I grew up in a family of, like, in my dad's side of the family, all they do is talk shit about everything and people. Mm-hmm. That's the culture I grew up in.
Yeah.
And so
I kind of grew up in that culture amongst friends, girls.
Yeah. And so, yeah, like, I was never in it in, like, a catty way with girls. I was more like my family would be like, yeah, what's this fucking guy's deal? What's he wearing, you know, like.
Yeah, just like, observational.
Yeah.
I think that's where it comes from for me is, like, I'm overly observant of other people.
Same. And that's why we're all in comedy because
we're judgmental. Judgmental is the true word.
Yeah, so I said that to my therapist.
Judgmental is the word.
I actually said that years and years ago to my therapist. I said, I'm judgmental. And she said, no, you're discerning. And I was like, no,
I'm both
judgmental. And it's good that I'm judgmental because this is how I create opinions and sense of humor and perspectives and whatever.
And but why you know does that?
It's not a bad thing.
Why does that word have such a negative connotation in our society? I think that word will stop being seen as negative in the next 5 years because everyone's become so judgmental.
Yeah, and I'm going to be like when someone listened to a band way before they were popular. I'm going to be like, I was judgmental way before it was cool.
Mm-hmm. I like to say, I don't think I'm judgmental. I think
I'm totally opinionated. No, you're judgmental.
I don't think I'm judgmental because I can still have opinions. I can still have opinions and thoughts on people and things and still be friends with them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you're like, you're a fun bitch. Like, that's what's fun about being friends with you. You really are. You're like a fun, like, entertaining bitch.
And
you know what I'll say about
you
too? You can snap back at Molly and she can take it. So, like, she can be bitchy, but you can be bitchy back. I don't like friendships where the one person can be bitchy, but if you call them out, they get all of a sudden, like, wilted flower syndrome.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Jen, my friend, I call her resident consultant Jen on the show. She's getting her doctorate in psychology. But her and I have that relationship. So, it's so satisfying. So the other day I sent her a joke and she just reinstated the joke. Like, she didn't get it. And I'm like, Jen, that's the joke. And so I could kind of say that to her like that. And then, like, she rebutted with something else. And I just was like, ugh, you're like a waste of my time. Mm-hmm. And I love her for that. And I love that. That's the relationship I want with friends.
You can't have a real relationship unless you're able to have those petty disagreements.
Yeah.
And each side can get over it.
But it's almost like more, it's not even something to get over. Like, that's the way we talk to each other. And I think it's the best.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be like, Jen, you're just a travesty today. And she, you know, and she'll say the same thing to me. And that's why we're so close.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But when you can't do that with someone, it's hard to really like connect.
Well, and Molly, to what you're saying about gossiping or talking about people, I feel like
the older
you get.
Okay, let me clarify though. I didn't mean gossiping. That's not what I meant.
Well, you meant because talking shit.
Gossiping to me sounds like, oh, did you hear what so-and-so's did? Let me tell you the dirt on them. That's not really what I would tell my therapist that I feel like I do, because I don't really do that. What I feel like I do is get a little bit obsessed about other people and what they're doing and have opinions about it.
That's gossip and you just don't want to admit it.
But who am I telling? I'm not telling anybody.
Yes, you are. That's why you feel bad about it. You're obviously telling people.
Well, Molly, no, I'll like talk about it to maybe like...
This is the point.
My husband.
This is the point I was going to make.
But that's the point of a spouse, is to gossip about other people.
I guess
people.
That is the point of marriage. Just to have someone to like confide in about everybody.
Well, that's also the point of just close friendship. So when I talk to my friends about embarrassing things or things that I know I should be judged about, I don't mind knowing that Molly and, say, our friend Mary Patterson will talk shit about me behind my back. And that maybe Molly would tell, say, you, a tertiary friend who I see like once a year.
Yeah.
Or something. But the thought of them telling a stranger feels violating.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I don't
I get
mind
that.
When
Absolutely.
My friends, I know they're probably talking shit about me within the group.
Right.
That
so
should
is that
be,
normal?
As an, yes, as an adult, you should know that's going on when
Absolutely.
You're in a friend group. Where it feels betrayal is all of a sudden somebody you don't even know knows your business. Because Molly told them.
Absolutely.
Like Molly talking shit on me to Kinner, Mary Patterson, you. That's within a circle of trust that I'm like, whatever, Krista knows I fucked up.
Like,
yes, I'm sure.
That's all we did this morning.
I'm sure. But it's when like the thought of somebody who doesn't have any allegiance to you is hearing your shit. That's where it feels like a betrayal.
Absolutely. I get that.
Okay, so
those are my rules.
I get
okay,
it,
that's
yeah.
what I'm getting at. So I think it's like... I guess you're right. Then talking about your close friends to other close friends, I suppose, is normal.
Very normal.
Other people do that?
Yeah.
So I'm not the only one? Because I always feel guilty about that. So I would tell my therapist that.
But I never do it with a mean intent. If I
no,
do that, there's
like
never
venting.
Maliciousness.
It's like venting or like when other people gossip to me, I usually try to shut it down because it makes me feel a little uncomfortable.
That's not fun.
One final thing I want to say about this.
I know, but I do have a friend, I'm not going to say who gossips about a lot of people that I don't know. And sometimes I feel weird that I know so much about these people.
That is my point. I'm
but
saying
I do
that
love...
is unfair gossiping. There is fair gossip and there is unfair gossip.
Okay, but so
I'm
I should
unfair.
Be okay with my fair gossip.
Brene Brown talks about this. You like Brene Brown talks about this like this person's casting the pearls in front of swine. Like you're swine in this story, though you're not. But it's like you don't deserve the right to know that person's
but
story.
But how exciting is it when you do hear their story? So say there's another comedian.
Sometimes it's not because you
sometimes
know the person's doing it to you.
Well, and also it's a burden because should I ever come across any of these people in a
you
social
have to,
situation,
yeah.
I feel like I know too much.
No. See, I like that. I
you
do.
You like that?
Well, like,
I don't like that.
So for example, if there's like...
Maybe you talk to your therapist about why you like that.
Because I'm a bitch. Molly's a fun bitch. I guess I'm just a bitch.
I wasn't going to say it, but yes.
Yeah. No, little things like this. So, for example, we've all been involved in comedy.
Yeah.
So, if there was a comedian that you didn't necessarily like or know that well, but you're just like, they like rubbed me the wrong way, and you heard they got fired from a show that they were writing on, you'd be like, ooh, what happened? Tell me about the show. Like, what show was it?
But the person...
That's fun gossip.
You have the right to want to know that. What you need to know as an intelligent adult is the person who will give you that information is going to give that other person that information when
about
you get
you,
fired.
Right.
So, yes, we
I
all have
the
desire
the
for that, but the person who does it doesn't realize how obvious they're being. And this sort of leads to my other rule about gossip. I'm fine gossiping within friends because you're not working together and there's no real competition and there's a baseline of love. I have major issues with gossip in a work environment, and I don't do it at all because that is where the game is real, and people are only trying to find things to ruin you.
Oh, that's bad.
And hopefully there's stakes in the break room.
And I did a really good job when I went to graduate school. So many people wanted to gossip, and I never gossiped about anyone. I never gossip at work.
I feel like that's a
rite
of passage.
It's one of my new rules, and I'll only do it if after like months and months I befriend somebody and we become very close, but that's like a one-person circle of trust.
I do feel like it's a rite of passage, though, as a gay man to be able to gossip.
The problem is with work environments in our country is gossips become the way you secure your job.
Oh, yeah. See,
and
that's
it's
dangerous.
Really,
yeah.
Really fucked up.
I have no job. So that's like never
me
entered
neither,
my zeitgeist.
Because the gossip is what gets you in.
Right. Exactly. Right. That's true. And I don't do it in a way where it's gross. And I don't play the game. That's for me.
I don't either.
I have no
I didn't
game.
Even know there was a game till Dr. Phil wrote a book about it a few years ago. And I'm like, fuck, I really haven't been playing this game.
Well, what book? What about what?
He wrote a book called like The New Rules. Or something.
Wait,
I don't
why
know.
Would you
it
read
came
a
out
book
4 years
Dr.
ago.
Phil.
He went on Oprah. I didn't read it. Oh, I actually listened to a book on CD after he went on Oprah. But he basically talked about the new games of American work culture. And like, if you're not playing the game or aware of the game, you're being played.
Absolutely.
So I looked
at
myself until I was about 33 and people were just always playing me.
And you're like, oh, I was such a, like, it's like the sharks versus the little minnows.
I was really naive because I wasn't out to destroy anyone. So I thought nobody was out to destroy me.
Oh. Right. Well, so the word agenda, I did not know meant anything other than a planner book until I was like 24 and started doing comedy. And there was this very...
Oh, I agree with you. Who would know what that word meant when you're in college? There was no agenda.
No,
for us.
Right.
Like, we were all really dumb.
Realize. I didn't know, and I was naive. And I was driving this comedian to a show, and I realized she was just using me for a ride because she didn't have a car. She angled it to me like, I'm going to introduce you to the booker and stuff, blah, blah, blah. No, she just needed a ride to the show. She never introduced me to anybody and blah. So when we were in the car on either the way there or back, she was like, everyone has an agenda. And I literally thought she meant a day planner. And then
so
I realized.
So you're in the car with a narcissist who just assumes, she doesn't know she's a narcissist, so she assumes everyone operates the way she does, which sadly in this town most people do.
Exactly. And so
the
then
is,
I realized.
If I had an agenda, I'd be upfront with you. I would say to you, hey, Kristen, I really need a ride to this comedy show. Would you mind giving me a ride?
Right.
And I'd be happy to introduce you to the booker.
And I also wouldn't.
I would say that.
And I also wouldn't use the word agenda if what I was doing with the person in the car was using my agenda with them.
Well, agenda is a narcissistic word for dream, goal. Mm-hmm. Like we all have goals, dreams, and a purpose.
But it's manipulative.
But when it becomes I can't say that word right now. Thank you, Molly. That's when it becomes, when somebody uses that word agenda, it's sort of like the word networking. All
but
of
grosser,
this stuff,
even grosser. And I still think networking's gross, but agenda is even grosser.
Networking sounds like using people for their
You are going to network to achieve your agenda. They are married. It's a husband and wife duo, those words.
But when she told me the word agenda, she didn't have to explain to me what it meant. Afterward, I realized, I was like, oh, agenda. Like, it's like the network, plan. They're using something. And so I, at that moment, realized, because I just started doing stand-up like 6 months before, I realized in that moment, I was like, I have no chance at this career because I'm not savvy. I'm not a shark. I'm not competitive. And I really got very discouraged. And I think that stuck with me my entire time of doing comedy. I'm like, I don't know how to have an agenda. I don't know how to use people.
You
well,
are
it's
smarter
funny because
than
you
me.
You witness a lot of people, as we all have. And I know we all know people like this who have had agenda, have been manipulative, and you've seen them succeed and rise.
Exactly. And who I'm referring to with the agenda is succeeded and has risen and is doing very well.
I'm sure. And so you were smarter than me because for me, for at least 6 years until I started to see these people who I was like, everyone is so onto you, succeed, I actually thought, oh, I'm being smarter by being nice. This person won't succeed. So I was really indoctrinated to be codependent. Lots of people don't know what that means, but it's basically a lack of self-love where you need everybody else to come first in front of you. I could get into that forever, but I really thought that like nice people finish first and
they
it
don't.
Took me a long time to get over that one.
It's really sad when you find out they don't. When I was in high school and I was bullied, I assumed because I was nice, I would be well off in the end. Like, it would win out.
That was every job I've ever had. Like, I put up with bullies all the time, and I was like, just love them more. I mean, it's really sick when I look back. How much I placated to things. And I think we all, I mean, I'm a man, but in the Me Too and all this stuff, it's actually interesting. I called out a bully at work 2 months before Me Too broke. And like, I sent the owners an email about what was going on, everything. And it was such a big step for me because I'm like, are you being so dramatic or crazy? It's like, no, this person has been bullying you. And I'm a 35-year-old man at the time. And it was really weird because I think collectively we all hit this point with what was going on in the country where Me Too to me was really about people being done with being abused, not just sexually, fiscally, which artists are abused all the time, and all these other ways that we were just taught to swallow. And I think we're the last generation that was taught this. I always say we're the last generation, people who are over the age of about 34, who are raised to be stupid.
Yes.
Because these people behind us, the problem is they're narcissistic. The good thing about them is they get what the game is and they're out to win. We're like,
that's a scary world.
And that's the only reason I think Donald Trump won and has so much power. He was able to be a narcissist when so many people were codependent in the 80s.
Right. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. He had 40 years of grooming, just like Michael Jackson was able to groom. I just don't think people will get away with these things the way they once did.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just went very on a random tangent.
Because like, even just talking about bullying, which is such a topic like nowadays for children and parents and everything, like when we were growing up, I don't even remember anyone using that word bully. You would just be like, so-and-so's mean to you, or like they did this to you. But I don't remember anyone ever using the word bully.
You were shamed to have feelings about being bullied. And especially as a gay kid, that was admitting that there was something wrong with you. So I wasn't allowed to address the bullying I experienced because that added more shame, because it's like, now we're actually talking in my family about me being gay. So if I had my tires slashed or whatever, we just all sort of wrote it off like, they must have thought your van was the principal's van. Or, you know, I look back at all these things and I'm like, no, this was just all...
They were kind of defending the bully.
Well, it was like let's just brush this under the rug. It wasn't a big deal.
Not your nice one, though, in your apartment that you put away for the red wine.
The golden boy?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't swipe anything under that rug. Yeah. Please. Yeah. That rug is very gay.
Well, years and years ago, I tried to submit an article. Like, I was trying to, like, do freelance writing, and I had no idea what I was doing. But the article I wanted to write was about how we always talk about youth bullying, but we don't talk about adult bullying. And I was trying to make that conversation happen, and then I was rejected and gave up immediately because I really didn't care that much. But anyway, so talking about bullying, I want to
Can I just say one more thing on that? I think that's very interesting because there's shame, and there used to be shame for me in being bullied because I was gay. Then there was shame when I was bullied because I was an adult male. And I'm sure a woman would feel it too. Like, I'm a female who's 30. I can't be bullied.
Right, exactly.
And actually, you can, because it becomes a conspiracy with other people. Like, it becomes this thing, but it's so embarrassing to admit when it happens.
Yeah.
There's still a lot of shame.
Yeah. And it's just crazy because as a kid, I thought, oh, well, once I'm an adult, I won't be bullied anymore. But bullying never dies. It's like the zombie that you just cannot kill.
Well, you also realize no one's an adult, which is what we're proving with this podcast with what we're talking about. But that's what's weird. Like, the whole thing of being an adult, it's just a lie. We're all damaged kids who then go off in the world and inflict our damage on other people and try to solve things.
And again, the only people I want to be adults are surgeons and pilots. Everyone else, we have no fucking idea.
And hairdressers.
And hairdressers, right. Yes, good absolutely. Point. That one's the most important. So a good segue into socially challenged is, we were just talking about bullies. And I think probably why I was never into friends was because when I was younger, being bullied, the only thing I got out of friendships was hurt and pain. And so then I had no interest in being part of groups or making friends, but then that led me to be very, very isolated. So now in this new show format that I'm doing each episode so far, we're talking about making friends and socializing because I'm curious about other people's experiences and like opinions on friends and especially groups of friends, because I hate groups of friends. I like one-offs. I need separate friends. So I just want to talk to you guys about your friend habits and if you're socially challenged.
I'm a more one-off person too. And like, I just realized that even just like having my baby shower recently and putting together the invitation list, I realized, oh, the majority of these people are kind of not connected. So then, you know, I it was just a realization at that moment. I was like, wow, I have a lot of kind of one-off friends. I have some small groups like Jason and Mary Patterson, for example, but it's kind of a threesome, really.
Yeah.
It's definitely a threesome, and you know it is.
I definitely love or can tolerate the threesome. But like a six or more some, I'm like,
I don't have that
you
really.
Guys are weird to me. Like, how do you, why?
I think it's very bizarre and toxic when that's happening after the age of about 24.
Like 13,
me too.
It's always toxic. But you know,
I stopped doing that shit after 13.
But I feel like it happens again in college. I actually think college is a very conformist time, and it's supposed to be this time of individuation, but it's not. I think college was very suffocating for me and very suffocating for many people, especially when you go to a college that has that setup of fraternities, sororities. It's a group time.
My worst nightmare would be to be in a sorority. Were you in a sorority?
God, no. I went to NYU. I went to NYU, so I didn't have to be around these kinds of people.
Right.
But I'm like you all. I'm a one-off. I find these groups, the older you get, to be very disconcerting when I see it. And Molly, it's interesting what you said, because I agree with Molly. I have a lot of anxiety about having get-togethers, especially if I'm the host, say Molly's baby shower, because you're not allowed to give anyone adequate attention. And then lots of people just aren't going to gel. And I have anxiety if I would ever get married, just because, to be honest, I have so many narcissistic people I'd have to invite to my wedding who almost like it would be their wedding. I have to make sure they have enough attention.
Right.
And get enough attention from
me. I hated my high school graduation because I was
mixing
like...
mixing all these people. No, it's exhausting.
Super exhausting.
Your graduation?
Well, yeah, I just feel weird saying it again because I kind of now with this repeat topic, I've said I don't want to repeat on every episode my scenario. So I did last week talk about my 30th birthday party. Never would do that again.
I was there.
I know you were there, but it was in...
I didn't get an invite. That's why you don't get to hear my gossip.
Yeah, you were... I feel like you could have been an invite, but I don't think I knew you well enough at the time.
Yeah.
That was like 6 years ago now at this point. I'm almost 36.
At that bar in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
That's when I gave you the dry shampoo that changed your life.
Yes. That's so funny that you have in your apartment now.
Yeah.
But
I always buy gifts for other people that I like, clearly.
I know, I love that.
Not funny.
But even in my high school graduation... That's a normal thing. People have high school graduation parties, right? That's a thing,
right.
Even where you guys are from, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I was so uncomfortable because it's cousins. I don't know their names. And, you know, the whole thing. I've just already said it, so I'm not going to really repeat myself. But, yeah, that group responsibility. And then also the added thing of, like, I wasn't the coolest kid in my school. So, like, not many kids showed up to my party. It was all old people eating ziti.
Yeah, that sounds really
foil.
Sad.
Yeah, like it was like there's a lot of food and we had a band and a tent and like no youth except like four of my friends that were very random. So then I had that added like embarrassment. And we did this thing in high school that I hated. It was when you were a senior, a couple weeks before the end of the school year, you went and painted your name on all the seniors' driveways. So it was like paint night. And so everyone would get like a can of paint and you'd ride around and you'd go from house to house. I'm from a really small town and you'd sign your name on people's driveways. So around town, you'll see names just painted on driveways. And so because I was picked on, the cool kids didn't like me, even though they were quote unquote cool. They weren't actually cool. I had like six names on my driveway. And that's humiliating. Other people's driveways were just like chocked full of like you couldn't even see the pavement anymore. And so it's like
it's just horrible.
It's just like, you know, with Twitter and things like Instagram, there's an actual number count to how quote unquote popular you are. And back then, before Instagram and Twitter, there was an actual number count on your driveway of how unpopular you were.
Oh God.
I saw something though, the less friends you have, the smarter you are. They
I saw that recently.
Well, you know why? Because it goes back to what we were saying at the beginning. It means
we're
you're
judgmental.
You're more discerning.
Absolutely.
That's a better word.
And you're spending time alone. I've wanted to do a joke about this where nowadays you realize there's so much smarter people on YouTube that like to have a friend, they got to give you something because I'd rather just watch a Q&A on YouTube and actually learn something.
I'm impressed you're finding smart people on YouTube. I find the opposite.
There's a lot of smart people on YouTube once you search.
Really?
Yeah, politically, otherwise. But, you know, Q&As, I don't even go to a Q&A in person anymore. They're all put on YouTube. So my idea of a nice Friday night is like watching a Q&A with some smart person I want to learn from and washing my dishes.
Yes, that's lovely. That's like my
I'm an omnivert. So omnivert is where you can act extroverted and you enjoy it to a point, but then it starts draining you and you have to go away.
I'm
so
an omnivert.
Like when
I've
I was
known.
In graduate school, it was go, 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 go. Because you're in all these classes, either. Omnivert, because there's extrovert, introvert.
Say both.
Yeah, it's a book by Susan Cain called The Power of Quiet. Something.
I heard of this book.
How
recently.
To survive in a culture that
the
won't stop talking.
The irony that you heard of it because it's quiet. Yeah.
I listened to a book on CD because it's really good book on CD. I sort of laughed a lot because it makes fun of Americans. But yeah, I'm definitely an omnivert. And in graduate school, I remember, you know, you just went and you were on and you're pitching all week. And then Friday night, I'd listen to Alec Baldwin's podcast, Clean My Apartment. And that's some of the best memories of my life. Because it was like, I need this, and not angry that I had to do the other things, but I need to restore.
Right. It feeds you.
Yeah.
I, in college, had a lot of regret because everyone would go out on Friday night. And I was part of, I did have a group of friends, but I was never really like part of the group. Like I was there, but not really there. They would all go out together and they called themselves the A crew. I was like the A minus crew. Like I wasn't totally in it, but
I'm
I was
getting the feeling you were the B crew.
I was so the B crew. I could have been in the A crew, but I just had no desire to be the A crew. And so, I remember them having so many pictures and it was toward, I don't know, like just the end of college more when like we're looking through all of our memories. I was in like no pictures, but it was my own choice. And I felt bad because I didn't go out with them and I didn't like do all the events and go out on St. Patty's Day and like all that shit.
May I ask you something? Because I've noticed you've been bringing up like high school a lot. Do you still feel connected to who you were in high school? Because
college.
Okay, both. I was having this conversation with somebody. I feel so disconnected, and maybe it's because I came out after college and different things, but I almost don't associate those memories with me. It's like they're the memories of this person who's now dead.
100% agree.
Okay, I was just wondering if other people feel that, and I didn't feel it till about 28. Like, I feel very disassociated by all that. It's so weird to me that people still hold on to like these fond memories of college or even bad memories. I'm like, for me, it's
like a glory days thing.
I guess I just didn't have that, but I don't really have that with anything that happened to me in my 20s.
You know what's really funny about that when you say like looking at a person that's now dead? It's like when I think about high school and I think about college, sometimes it's hard for me to remember kind of who I was in those times. But if I look at a photograph, that might spark a memory or something like that. What I realize, the main shift in mentality between those times and now, is I used to feel, and I think maybe it's part of our generation, that you would work hard or do a good job and someone would notice and reward you.
That was the lie we were sold.
The lie we were sold. And then as you get older, you realize you have to ask for what you want. You have to actually demand it. You have to push it.
And play the
game. And that's why those people that are manipulative and have an agenda get so far ahead because they do that.
They bulldoze all the codependents.
So no one's going to go, wow, Molly, you did a great job. Let me promote you.
No.
That does not happen.
No. Well, like I have,
you have to ask for a promotion. You know, you have to ask for everything
you
want.
Well, my brother and I both have had kind of a Peter Pan kind of complex where like we feel like we're just like kids and we're special and people will notice. And my brother is very good looking, handsome, like growing up. And still now, people say he looks like a mixture of Christian Slater and Tom Cruise.
He really does.
He's a very good-looking guy. And he had this like fantasy that someone would see him and swoop him off to Hollywood and he would become this famous actor. We didn't understand that the world is harsh and you can look like Tom Cruise and Christian Slater and no one will give a fuck unless you give a fuck about yourself.
Right.
And so he was very disillusioned. And when he realize that like, oh, you actually have to work and whatever, you know, it's like,
well, you know,
upsetting.
Okay, so that's entitlement. And I you know, not to be judging him, but we're judging people.
Totally.
But okay, so that's one issue. But what Molly's talking about, I think is even deeper.
Yeah.
We were sold this lie that like undergraduate mattered,
right.
Your grades
you
mattered.
Work hard and that's
I
fine,
also
that's
think
it.
The middle class of this country was so naive to how much the 1% runs everything. And I remember.
Yeah, I will say as a 1%er, we do run everything, and you guys are very, very naive.
Yeah, but you are because the second you go to compete with these people, you're just exposed to something that you can't be exposed to until you experience. It's so interesting to me.
Absolutely. 100%. So if you guys could do it over and know, like, if you did play the game more and had more friends, life would be ultimately easier in that aspect, maybe harder because not who you are, but easier on that like other level. Would you do it? Would you go back and be that person who had an agenda and played the game and had groups of friends? And
I don't have a desire to play the game. I wish I could go back with the brain I have now and the knowledge I have now. Who doesn't? But then also, how painful would that be? I don't know. It's weird. Sometimes you have moments in life where you're like, gosh, it sucks that you don't get to do it again, because, and maybe you do, but with the knowledge you have, like
I'm
the knowledge I have
Botox
now feels so
and
great.
Like pretend I'm doing it for the first time. So I will get it again.
I don't know if you all feel this like at our age, you have this knowledge, but you almost feel, especially in this industry, your time's already passed.
Oh my God.
But
yeah,
now like, you have all this knowledge and you're like, fuck, like what am I supposed to do with this now, God?
I know. I know. Like my career, it should have ended. I mean, not that it ever started, but if it did, it would have ended at 5 years ago. My clock's over.
I felt that cut off too 5 years ago when things sort of went south for me. I was like, well, that's it. No one's going to tell me that's it, but no one's hiring you now at this age.
But that's also not real. That I do think that
it is in the game. Well, you have to go create your own game.
Extent, you have to create
what
your own
I
game.
What I want
exactly.
to happen for ageism in Hollywood is what's happened for diversity and sexism. We need now a movement of ageism.
Not me. I don't want to look at old people.
Well, you
I'm
know
kidding.
What?
I'm kidding.
You,
I
if
love
you look
old
at so many,
people.
Like, I mean, I look at like
and they're not even old.
Jane Fonda. What's her show?
Grace and Frankie.
Grace and Frankie, right? They're so brilliant, and it just shows me
yeah,
like
talent
gosh,
doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop, and there's material in every stage and phase of life that is relatable and hilarious and fun.
And that's what I've hated.
But Hollywood is ageist.
Right.
Well, it's not just that Hollywood's ageist. It's a more interesting thing that no one talks about. You can do it till you're 80, like Jane Fonda or Marta Kaufman, who created the show, is probably close to 60 now, but you gotta get in by 34. So that's the
more
thing.
Like
they don't let you in after 34, even as a writer. Like, you gotta get in by then. And then once you're in, you can age. But they're not looking for a new Tina Fey who's 45. Tina Fey can have that career because she was Tina Fey by 28.
It's a really good point. And
so
now
that's
I need to go take more antidepressants.
That's the thing is
because
like,
that
yeah,
would be sad.
It would be great to see, you're not allowed to sort of come into this career if you don't fit the right rubric after a certain age.
Absolutely.
But and that's true. And that's why I feel like what's happened for diversity and what's happened for you know, Me Too and sexism and all of that needs to happen for ageism, because it's definitely discriminated against and it's so obvious.
Well,
it's
not just discriminated, it's celebrated. You can see in someone's eyes when they're younger than you, like, don't got to worry about you, like, you're dead. Like, you know, so it's a very dog-eat-dog world. And if I'm going to be honest with myself, I didn't rejoice in those feelings, but I remember feeling that when I was in my 20s and saw somebody who's now my age who wasn't there yet. I'm like, what are you doing? It's done.
The ironic part or the bad part is that as you get older and you get all this life experience, you become so much better and funnier.
There's actually a speech about this and Something's Gotta Give Act
really?
One.
Okay,
where
I need Frances to watch
this. Frances McDormand says that
I need
basically.
To watch
She's
it.
Like, the irony is a woman doesn't have a man. Well, she gets older. She gets smarter. She gets wiser.
And she gets better.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you're not wanted, but it's like, but now I'm best. Right.
Exactly. I do think comedy is the one place where you can still at least create your own material regardless of what age you're at.
Yeah. Or steal it at whatever.
Yeah,
age
but
you're
I
at.
Say this a lot as being a gay man. I'm like, you know, people are like, "Oh, you're still attractive." I go, "Yeah, but my asshole has a timestamp on it and my voice, my mouth works and I have opinions." So most men older than me or even my age are looking for a 20-year-old not because he's more handsome, but the ass has a longer shelf life. And the mouth hasn't started working yet.
Right.
Mouth doesn't have opinions.
Yeah,
yet.
The mouth only does
that.
One thing,
right.
And it's not talk.
Right. And we yes.
Everything goes back to something's got to give and being opinionated.
My asshole's always been the thing that talked. Always been a farter.
Okay, Kristen, TMI.
Okay.
Kristen, we are having really deep conversation and then you just sort of
I told you we
it.
Need to make it keep it like at like Sex in the City moments where
yeah, well, what was
it's
fun.
Light.
We are being like deep fun, sorry. Like Molly's fun bitch.
This is becoming a thing now. So far, the past two episodes of this new format, I talk about bath. I'm like, I would tell my therapist I'm obsessed with bathroom behavior and talk. It's weird. Like I have like a fixation with pooping and.
You should hang out with my 5-year-old niece because that's her favorite topic.
And we also probably have the same math skills. So
yeah, probably.
I wouldn't feel intimidated. Okay. So let's talk about stuff that we want to sweat the small stuff over, which is shit that just pisses us off that people do. And so I'm not going to start because I'm a gracious host. And also, I don't know what I'm going to say quite yet. So you guys have to take the lead on this. And be funny. Stop being so serious.
I'm trying.
Wow, so gracious.
A lot of pressure here. You know, this is funny. I guess this is kind of new for me. But when you're pregnant, you get a lot of attention for being pregnant. Everybody kind of makes comments and stuff. Like last night, Kristen and I were at an event, and I must have had 30 people make a comment. I'm not joking you. And I don't really mind it. That doesn't bother me. I know some people are really sensitive to that.
For people listening, Molly is 7 and a half, 8 months pregnant.
8 months today, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, when if people go, are you sure there's just one in there? That bothers me. I'm like, shut the fuck up. That's so rude.
It's so rude.
It's so rude.
Well, like I was.
And then I go back and I was like, I hope I have never said that to anyone. I think I said it to someone once in my life. And to that person, I am deeply sorry. I'm going to send them an apology.
Karma's a bitch.
It's horrible. Yeah. Yes. I'm like, oh my God, that is just like the rudest thing ever.
Well, I was saying to you last night, like I wouldn't want to get pregnant because I don't want it to give people an excuse to talk to me. It's
they will
such
an
icebreaker, and it's like having a puppy or a dog. Just because you have a dog and you're on a walk doesn't mean you want to have a full conversation about that other person's dog.
You're right. Pregnancy and dogs make you akin to a public figure. Mm-hmm. You basically do become a celebrity.
Yeah. I feel like a celebrity.
And you don't
everywhere
own
I
yourself
and
anymore.
And they think they know you. And
And like, and then I really, honestly, I don't mind any of the attention at all. And sometimes it's fun. Sometimes it's playful. Sometimes it's hilarious. Like, oh, the other day I was at Home Goods, you know, talking about
being a pregnant woman.
You're going to Crate and Barrel.
Molly and I love Home Goods. We're Home Goods people.
You just said you're going to Crate and Barrel. Anyway.
Well, I go to
all
of them.
I like Home Goods. Yeah. I do.
So I went to Home Goods and this guy, swear to God, he's behind me. And he goes, are you part of the Big Belly Brotherhood? And it took me a minute because I was like, is he talking to me? And then I turned around to see if he was talking to me. And sure enough, he was. And he pointed at his own stomach, which was like a pot belly, and said it again. He goes, big belly brotherhood. I went, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, except mine's filled with a life and yours is filled with beer.
It was so weird. And I think he could tell from my face that this is the only time I've been like, kind really annoying.
Sure it was, Molly.
No, but all the other times, no, I've been like laughed it off or whatever. But this was, I was like, that was fucking rude and weird. And so I kind of rushed into the store like to get away from him. Then he comes up behind me in one of the aisles and he goes, I wanted to tell you congratulations. So I think he felt bad.
Yeah.
But it was just the strangest comment to ever get.
Yeah, he's big like, oh, belly congratulations on welcoming you to the Big Belly Brotherhood.
I think he was trying to be funny, obviously.
Yeah, definitely.
He was older man, like 60-something.
Yeah, so you were being ageist, speaking of ageism. Yeah. And Molly, I'm going to push back
on
you.
Wait, why am I being ageist?
Because he's an older guy making a bad joke. That's what older men do. That's what older people do. Yeah, they make bad jokes, and we forgive them for them.
Okay.
I want to push back and actually make my thing sort of the opposite of Molly's story. I've noticed there's a thing in the culture now. If you talk to any person at random, their first reaction is so angry, so dark. Like, you can't make a joke, even if it's funny. Even like, people almost, like, they are ready to fight you.
They are.
And I don't know if it's a product of the election. I've noticed in the last, it's always been bad, but it's ratcheted up. And now I just don't make jokes or anything because people are like, huh, what? Like, even waitresses and waiters, like, you say anything trying to be cute or something, and it's almost like people aren't even in the actual moment of the world. They're in their head, like, why am I not famous yet? I need to get here, blah, blah, blah. And you've interrupted their train of thought of misery with some joy,
and
they're
not
angry
prepared
that you've injected that joy or tried.
Okay, love that you're saying this. So,
good point.
I don't live in Los Angeles anymore. I was feeling very negative. I felt like people responded to me in a way that I was not intending. I'm trying to be like funny or like charismatic, and people are like, fuck you. So people talk about LA and the sunshine and San Diego and the beach. People out here, not everybody, but have that energy.
They have their own agenda.
Exactly.
And you have interrupted the agenda.
Exactly. So I moved back to the East Coast. I hate that New York gets a rap of being a city where people are rude, because people there are fucking amazing. And
I agree
if you
with
start
that.
A conversation with someone in New York, they are like, hey, let's start talking. So it'll be like this one example. I was grabbing a slice of pizza and there was no Parmesan cheese, which I thought was strange. So I turned to the guy next to me and I'm like, why is there no Parmesan? Like, isn't there always Parmesan for pizza? And he's like, yeah, what the fuck? There's no Parmesan. We ended up having a slice of pizza together, commiserating over like no fucking Parmesan. In LA, if you did that to somebody, they would...
I don't know. I'm vegan.
Right.
Like,
you
it's really quick. Like, what?
Fuck you.
At first response in LA is always, what?
Yes.
Like, why are you talking to me? You're not famous and I'm trying to be famous.
But you know what I realized when I was living here is I became like that too, because
you
I noticed.
Have to. Self-preservation.
Self-preservation, because people were being, like, if someone started talking to me, it had become such a routine that they were yelling at me over something that if someone went to say something, even friendly, I already got in a defensive position because I thought they were going to yell at me. Like, I was doing the wrong thing, like I, or something. And so I became very on edge. And so I see it's like a domino effect that it started affecting me. So I'm back on the East Coast right now. I'm in LA, you know, for a few days, which feels lovely to just like be here and know I'm leaving. But yesterday, Molly and I went to Mendocino Farms to get lunch. And I have such a lighter, better energy now that I don't live here. And the guy working goes, I love your energy. And it's like, because I don't live here anymore.
You're actually present. That, yeah. There's almost a contract. It's weird when you move places, there's an invisible contract. And no one ever talks about this, but it permeates your brain. It's almost a brainwashing.
Totally.
And in LA, it's almost like you're always thinking about the next step you need for
preservation or
for your agenda.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very agenda-driven town.
And
that, people don't...
That energy soaked into me and it made me feel paralyzed.
Yeah.
And very negative. So, I kind of make it the joke about like not wanting to be pregnant because I don't want to talk to people. The truth is, I wouldn't mind. But last night, the amount of people that were coming up to Molly is like, oh my God. Okay, like a couple people here and there. Fine. But like...
It was a lot of people.
But people don't realize that 10 people before them had already said the same thing.
Was this also at Mendocino Farms?
No, this was at this was at the event we went to last night, Adam Carolla's 10th year anniversary for his podcast.
Oh, fun.
And so he had a get-together thing. And so we were there. But, you know, Molly being so visually, like, pregnant, you know, it's a conversation starter. So I get it. I've actually kind of said... I wouldn't mind like losing a finger. If I lost a finger, I'd be fine with it because it'd be my icebreaker. I'd always have something to talk about.
Well, you know what's funny?
Or people would have always something to ask me about.
Kind of
worth the loss.
It's so funny. Kind of going back to what you said with Mendocino Farms. Like, she was so chatty with this guy that when she came to sit at the table, I said, oh, do you know him? And I was like, this is a whole new Kristen. You know, she's like, no,
yeah,
I don't.
And it is like a whole new me.
But it's funny because like generally speaking, when people are, you know, approach you when you're pregnant and make these comments, I personally don't mind it. I know a lot of people do, but I don't mind it. And I think it's kind of fun. To the point where last night when I got home, I was like, oh, this will all be over soon and people aren't going to be so nice
to me. I know. If you like the attention.
But then I guess they'll get a lot of attention. The baby
once you have the baby.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting. People are way friendlier at an event like it sounds last night was, or a wedding where there's a social agreement that everyone's already at a certain level to know what the event's about and who the person's about. There's a community already created. So it makes sense that more people approached you last night because everyone had been vetted. It was a vetted room.
True.
And that's why I hate dancing at gay bars. I hate dancing anywhere in public. But if I go to a wedding, it's so great because there's already a verbal contract. Nobody can be a C word.
Yes.
Like men or women.
Yeah.
I'm not using that in a derogatory term towards women, just humans in general.
C word's one of my favorite words.
Yeah. So I love weddings because people know they can't be an asshole to you.
Totally Jason, agree. Did you get to what your smutting the small stuff was?
Well, you inspired me with that whole thing because that bothers me. I really hate when people break the text rule and call you, we're texting and now I'm calling you because
you're
trapped.
Your phone.
You're trapped. It pisses me off and it should actually be illegal.
It should be. My brother does that to me all the time.
That's really funny.
I respond.
I feel like I do that to you, Jason.
And
I don't mind
me.
When you do it, but I mind when a lot
Molly
of people
it.
Do it.
Molly does do it. Yeah.
Well, because at a certain point, you're like, okay, fuck it. I'm not going to text.
Like, oh, jeez. Yeah.
No, I also have issues with people who use FaceTime if there's not a baby or a lover involved. Do you only FaceTime with somebody you're having sex with?
I FaceTime you all the time.
I know, and it's odd. We're like sitting on the sofa staring at each other. We've never had sex. Why are we doing this? I only want to see my nieces and nephews and kids, or I want to see a guy I'm hooking up with. I don't want to see my parents. I don't want to see my friends. Like, what's the point here?
See, I'll be cool with seeing my parents. It's the guy that I'm dating that did not give me a warning that I need to put on some mascara to answer this phone call. And I'm like, fuck you. I've answered a FaceTime from like guys that I've dated and just put the phone to the ceiling. I'm like,
well,
I'm
see,
not
the good thing
my
about my apartment, my something's got to give apartment, it has great lighting for FaceTime. Oh. So I don't mind FaceTiming. Okay, the nice thing about your nieces and nephews, they don't care what you look like. But if it's somebody
but they'll
romantic,
be honest with you about how they look, how you look.
Romantic wise, I have the lighting for it, but it's just so much more work. Like, if I'm going to talk to a friend, I want to also be doing my dishes,
right?
Cleaning my apartment.
You don't have to hold the phone
I'm not going
to
stop my life for you.
Right. There's this new thing. I don't know if it's an Amazon product or what it is, but it's a like FaceTime type of thing that you set up on a counter
and it portal.
Follows you like around the room. Oh. So you can be like doing things and it's still like,
that will like accidentally kill you. It's going to kill somebody.
It's
going to
accidentally
dangerous.
Show someone's giant dildo that they have in the background that they forgot was there, which will definitely happen to me because I have so many.
Yeah.
My parents got that thing. They love it.
Oh, so they have that. Mm, okay, cool. Yeah. What do you know what it is?
It's called the Facebook Portal.
And it's from Facebook?
Yeah, it's from Facebook and it's called the Portal.
Oh, weird. But see, that creeps me out though because I feel like Facebook's getting creepy and they'll save that video of you walking around the room and
they're getting creepy, Krista.
Or they are creepy.
Too involved. I don't want them in my house.
Yeah. Well, so I mentioned earlier I was going to talk about retail something because you had mentioned it earlier on the show. I have beef with retail employees and they say, hi, how are you? In like an aggressive way rather than a friendly way. And they're like, hi, how are you?
They're setting up the power dynamic to make it clear I'm better than you.
Yes.
And it's like, but you're not.
Well, I think it's them trying to, like you said, visiting someone in prison. It's them trying to assert a little power and a little self-worth in their prison.
You can't win as a service employee. I worked in service for so long waiting tables. If you're too nice to people, they abuse you. I hate when people want to know your name. It's like, why do you want to know
your
name?
Oh my God. I was just talking about that recently. Who was I with? I can't remember.
They want to report you.
They want you to be their slave. So it's like, let me find out your name so I can, Jason.
Oh, it was
Jason.
It was a guy I went on a date with. He called because we had reservations at this place. He called and asked if he could move the reservation up or later and never up because I'm not early on anything. So when he got off the phone, he was saying, what's your name before I hang up? And so I said to him, I go, basically that's you saying, I want your name so I can blame you when my reservation is fucked up. Because I used to work as a receptionist. When I first moved to LA, I worked at a hair salon called Juwan Juwan. And
I've been there.
Oh, yes, because Amanda did your hair.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it's called Juwan Juwan, but people think it's Juan Juan.
I thought it was Juan Juan.
Yeah, I did too. But people would call. I was a receptionist, and I'm terrible at any job. Any job that requires multitasking, taking care of customers. I'm so bad at it. And people...
Any real job.
So a job. That's why I have a podcast.
Thank God.
So I can fuck this up and luckily still have some people that will continue to listen. But these women would call and people who went to Juwan Juwan a lot of the time were like these Brentwood or Beverly Hills a-holes that had never heard the word thank you in their entire lives. And they'd say, I want to change my appointment to 15 minutes earlier, blah, blah, blah. And they know who I am. And then I'd say, okay, all right, all set. You're all good to go. And they'd be like, and who am I speaking with? And I would just be like, Kristen. I would say it in such a like, fuck you. I know why you're asking my name because if something goes wrong, you want to yell at me later. So I always hate when people ask for names. Occasionally you do have to do it.
You have to do it over the phone when it's something important because it's you've now promised me something, but I know I'm going to call back and get a different person. And I'll make it clear that's why I'm asking. I'm like, listen, you've been so helpful. Can I just have your name in case there's problems when I call back? Three times a year, I have something. Now, I'll have other things to say. For example, the In-N-Out Burger took away the men's restroom in Westwood. I've complained about that three times. One's for women, and one's now unisex. But the unisex one is marked before the woman's. So every man and woman uses the unisex one because they don't realize there's another one for women. So what's so annoying is women are now using this,
so now you
and men have no restroom.
Line.
No, I mean, this is what's happened in today's world now. A man, like, we don't even get a restroom at an In-N-Out where hundreds
just
of people are.
Pee in the bush
are?
Where the rest of them are. You
a single bathroom? Like a single stall?
They change it, I guess, for trans rights and all, but build a third restroom.
Right.
But women now get their own restroom. And men just don't get a restroom, but they should have made the unisex the second one so women all go into the women's,
right.
And then someone who maybe is looking for a third option looks.
Right.
But like now everyone uses that, and then as a man, you're just screwed because that's become a private bathroom.
How often are you
that women are using?
In-N-Out.
A lot because it's close to the gym and everything. And
Nothing like doing gym and In-N-Out.
I'm an emotional eater.
Undo
it. I'm an emotional eater, and I stop at this In-N-Out lots of times on my way home from the beach just to get a thing of fries and use the restroom. Well, now I'm waiting for females to come out of this restroom when they have their own restroom that's not a door lock. It's a full restroom the way this was till last
year.
That
is really annoying.
You're not a high-class restaurant. This is an In-N-Out that serves hundreds of people at lunch. Men need to pee.
Yeah. I've occasionally,
something else I haven't processed
I've occasionally
yet.
Been like a weirdo and written emails to companies that like have annoyed me. And I don't do it in like a Yelpy way where I'm on Yelp like complaining.
No. I go right to the source. Yeah. I'm not a Yelper. I'm going to tell you to your face. I'm very New York that way.
Love that.
I have no desire to talk shit on you on a public forum.
Yeah, like I was
I'm
like, why
is tell you
no
that your salad
cheese?
Sucks
you guys,
to your face,
I
Lady Gaga.
I love Yelp so much that I've gotten, some people have emailed me on Yelp, like DM'd me and said, I love your Yelp reviews. And it makes me feel so,
awesome.
So good. I'm like, you love the way I complain.
Yes. That's hilarious.
You're like, a fun bitch. Molly, I told you, that's it. Yes. You're a fun bitch. That could be the name of your book, all about your Yelp reviews. You need to find a way to monetize.
Well, going back to your how do you make friends, I was like, these people that admire the way I complain on Yelp really should be my friends.
Yeah, you guys would definitely hit it off.
We would hit it off.
You could a podcast about that.
I could.
Like,
yeah, they like the way I complain.
Fun bitch. I love it.
That should be the name of your podcast.
I'm building up the courage. I got the email of the manager at Sweet Lady Jane. For those who don't know, that's it's a famous cake place in L.A. Ellen and Portia had their cake done there. They sell $9 slices of cake.
Wow.
Well, they discontinued my favorite cake. And I am livid. Oh, and here's what I hate. All these things are being discontinued on me. And when I bring it up to the first employee, they go, well, it's been gone for like 6 months. Almost
like,
questioning
hello.
My loyalty
right.
to
not
this
been
cake.
Here?
Yeah. No, the blackout espresso fudge cake. I've been in a romance with it. Sorry that I went and fucked other things for a while, but that's my cake. I'm like R. Kelly with these desserts. You know, it's like there's multiple. Like they're all mine. Sorry, you
hidden
can't make fun of R. Kelly. Now everybody hates me. But anyway, I got this guy's email. I think this is fair. I'm going to email him and say, listen, some of us depend on this cake. It should be available the first of the month, one cake. And whoever loves this cake can come those first few days and, you know, till it sells out. Mm-hmm. But you can't just take this cake away from me.
Well, it's like Elaine in Seinfeld with the sponge. She used the
very
sponge.
Very similar.
She tried to collect all the sponges.
Kristen,
some
you should
things.
Have a segment in every show where you relate something that happened in Seinfeld.
I do that.
Because you relate to Seinfeld all the
That's
time.
That's all I do. It's weird.
You should have a segment.
It's annoying and I need to stop.
No, it's part of your personality.
On my other podcast, the Ask Women podcast. All I do is make Seinfeld references. It's like a thing. And I don't do it to be...
I think you have to do
it's
it.
Just, it's just, they cover everything in life. Everything touches upon
something. I haven't
watched
the show in like 15 years, so I I loved it. I mean, I watched them all growing up, but I forgot about, but I also had a bad experience where this guy loved Seinfeld. I went to his house and we started watching it, then hooking up, and it just felt so wrong.
Oh my God, my dream, my fantasy is to just have sex with Seinfeld on in the background.
I do have a crush on Jerry. Jerry and Seinfeld, he had a nice tight ass.
Yes.
Not to objectify him, but the jeans, he was a hot little
they
piece
always,
back then,
they
now
always,
that I know what I want.
It was a running thing that he would say, I'm clean and neat, but I'm not gay.
I mean, he has...
I'm single, clean, and neat,
he has beautiful legs. Till this day, he has beautiful legs and a lovely little ass. And when you watch that
it's
show...
Tight.
No, it's a tight,
in the way
beautiful
the 90s
ass.
Jeans fit.
And he was like, he would have been a really fun guy to, you know... ride around with back in the day. But even now when I watch Comedians in Cars, I'm like, he is sort of a handsome motherfucker.
It's his charisma that shines
it's
through.
It's the legs.
His...
He has a really great sexy legs.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a couple episodes where he did
and
take his shirt
big
off.
Eyes.
And...
Big eyes are a
I
big
don't
thing.
I remember his shirt off at all.
Yeah,
gosh.
He had like one episode where he was
he had a hairy
man.
Chest.
He had, yeah,
really
had
nice
chest.
He had a cute little compact little Jewish body.
Oh
that
my
I'm
God,
into.
If I had ever met Jerry and he was into me, whew.
Speaking of compact Jewish bodies that are very attractive, last night Jimmy Kimmel was there.
Oh my God.
He's very hot.
He's not Jewish. He's Italian.
Jimmy Kimmel's not Jewish?
He's Italian.
Oh, I had
him and Carolla are Italian.
I didn't know
they, like,
that.
They like go to the Italian fest here in LA.
I didn't know that. Yeah. The San Gennaro.
San Gennaro fest.
Oh, yeah.
But he does look like he could be Jewish.
I thought he was. He's very cute in real
he's
life.
He's so cute in real
life.
Well,
he does intermittent fasting, right? He doesn't eat two days of the week.
Thin.
He does intermittent fasting, but he does the hardcore one where you literally don't eat 2 days a week.
Wow, that sounds horrific. Well, so just the friend thing, it's funny because I'm doing the segment on being socially challenged, but yet everyone I've had on the show, I'm like, oh, this is my friend, and I've made friends with them. So with Molly, I saw her at whatever
O'Brien's
show. She was wearing a leopard print skirt.
Yes.
And I was wearing like a baseball t-shirt or like very casual.
I think you were like jeans and a shirt.
Jeans and a t-shirt. It was a t-shirt with baseball
and like Converse
on
or something.
It. Yeah. And I loved that, like, you were wearing leopard print to do stand-up. I thought it was amazing. And you were so judgmentally funny and so bitchy funny.
Oh, thank you.
In the best way. But I have, like, a paranoia that people hate me immediately from the get-go. And I don't think you did like me right away. Because you were like, who's this girl, like, in a t-shirt and jeans?
No, I definitely didn't feel that way.
No, yes, you did.
I don't think so.
Because, so, you were in the bathroom and I like, I wanted to say hi to you. It was the same with, so Allie Breen, who's a comedian, I wanted to be friends with her. Like, I can tell immediately who yeah. I like and who I'll be friends, who I could be friends with and who I couldn't. And immediately I was like, oh, I like love her. Because your stand-up was hilarious.
You're like my Yelp people.
Yes. And I love the way you complain. I immediately love the way you complain. So Molly was wearing this like leopard print skirt and I didn't know what else to say, but I was like, I love your skirt. And I think you said something like, oh, well, I can't wear a t-shirt like you to do stand-up or something like that, where you kind of picked on what I was wearing and I instantly was in love. I'm like, I love her. She is the best bitch ever. And
you know, so what's very bizarre is Molly was one of the weirdest, like, new friends. What the relationship is, because it should have been like that for me, it was the exact opposite. You were really socially awkward.
Uh-oh.
You had just come back from Africa. I sort of thought you were lying about your job in Africa.
You had a job in
and then
Africa?
You like really
lying.
Wanted to hang
it.
Out with me and you were like a little
I
clingy
wanted to
at
be
first.
His friend more.
Yeah, yeah. But then the relationship, she flipped and I became the submissive.
Right.
But I remember at first I was like, God, I got it. Fine, I'll take you to Whole Foods and you can come to my apartment. She was like amazed that I had my own apartment.
I was amazed that he had his own apartment.
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was living at home. I just moved here.
Oh.
And like, she just was so desperate, like a dog in heat, to be my friend. And I remember being really turned off at first. And then gradually I was like, God, she is cool.
Yeah. Well, that's
I did want to be your friend badly. I was like Kristen to me.
Yeah. That's what I feel like why I don't make friends, because I don't want to look pathetic. Like, I don't want to not have the upper hand and be like the needy one who's like, hi, I like you. Do you like me back? And I have to prove myself. But no one seems to really approach me to be my friend. And so I do have to kind of take the bull by the horns and like explain, like, listen, I'm cool. Like, I think you'll like me. We have a similar sense of humor, even though we might not look like it or something. And so then I feel like I have to ease people into wanting to be my friend.
It's one of the best pieces of advice that she didn't mean as advice for me. It was in her book. But Jane Lynch talked about that when she did Julie and Julia with Meryl Streep.
She was in that?
Yes. She played Dot, the sister, the tall sisters.
I didn't realize
and
that.
It's right when Jane Lynch was about to break with Glee. I think that movie came out between the pilot and whatever, probably filmed before the pilot of Glee. So she wasn't yet Jane Lynch. And she said, I was so nervous with Meryl Streep and I just kept telling myself, let her come to you.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, on like the third day of filming, Meryl grabbed her hand and she was like, thank God I didn't like... I was able to calm my anxiety and not go, oh my God, you know.
Yeah,
and
it's great when you can show
yeah,
the
Yeah, and I think with
coolness.
Power dynamics, you really have to do that when somebody is famous or just has more power than you. Be nice, but let them come to you.
Absolutely.
And I haven't done that a lot in my life and I regret it.
That's why you're alone. No, it's a skill. Like, you really have to think about doing that and not look, you know, it's not like, and it's not being fake. You're like, it's not like you're trying too hard to like look cool. You just have to just be you, do your thing, and the right people will be attracted to
it's
you.
It's knowing
come up
that
you
have the worth to just be there. You don't have to just spew it all.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, Molly came along and she was just really itching.
I needed a friend.
You really did.
That was also the old school J-Ro, meaning like.
Yeah, I was very
chippy,
like exciting.
He was
and,
like,
you know.
He was like peppy.
Well, I remember the first time I saw you. I'm sure you don't remember the first time you saw me. I'm not super memorable at first, I think, for a lot of people. Like with Stevie, she did did not remember meeting me the first time. And I was so intimidated by her. I just was like, I like your
Isn't
jacket.
Isn't the first time we met when I helped you with flyers for that show you guys were
no,
doing?
No, we
oh,
met
okay,
before,
I met you before that.
No, we actually didn't meet, but I saw you doing stand-up. I was on a show with you.
Great.
I don't think you saw my set, but you were doing a whole set on like Sex and the City stuff.
Yes.
And you were one too, like, kind of like Molly. Like, I'm like, oh, I like him. I want to be like, I want to talk to him. But I didn't, you know, so I like let it go. But it was one of those scenarios where I think I didn't want to give up the upper hand and just be like, hi, you don't know me and you didn't see my set, but I'm a comic too. You know, I just, sometimes I don't have the mental strength to go through with it. It's like very draining and hard because I'm an omnivert.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
You omnivert. Might even be an introvert.
I am to an extent, but I like really feed off of audience-y things.
Yes.
Like when, like last night at the Corolla thing, I liked being around those people that
being
like,
on. They, it's a lamp.
It's an on. Like
it's
I turn
a
on
lamp. When you're an omnivert, it's like you have control of this lamp, but you know when the lamp needs turned off.
Yes, and it needs to be shut
off. It
needs
off. To be recharged. Mm-hmm. I like how you said that because I think I'm a little bit of an omnivert too then.
Yeah, I've never lived.
It's like you
lived,
can do your performance, but then you need to go retreat.
I think most people that I am friends with would probably be omniverts. I couldn't be friends with people who are just strictly
one or the other.
Introverts or extroverts.
Yeah.
And if I do, we're probably not that close.
That's why I lived with one friend once and I never did it again because she went, Jason, why aren't you excited like you usually are to see me? I'm like, because now we're living together and I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like when you live with me, I don't.
It's different
like,
me.
I was always on in high school. I came home. My brother was the one who was on at home. Like I was very like, I went to my room and hung out. Like, but I loved being on when I'm on.
The exact same way. My roommates.
But that's why I fear even living with a boyfriend or something like they have to. Now I think I present more true to who I really am than I did when I was younger. When I was
so
younger,
not
I think
the on and the off.
I'm not as on as I used to be.
There's like more of a natural segue.
Which is nice.
Yeah. My roommates that I lived with in LA, I'm sure they thought I was the most antisocial person in the world because I would just go straight to my room and I'd have my door closed.
Yeah.
But it's because that's the time I need to recharge where I live. But if I met those two roommates and they didn't know me and we were out somewhere and I could talk to them and like have fun. But living with them, I'm like, nah, I need my time. I need my space. Goodbye. So anyway, so we're going to wrap up the show with Tough Love from Tony. You guys aren't going to hear it yet because it's not recorded yet. But if you'd like to do a little performance piece for being very impressed with what Tony said, I will edit it in and put it at the end of what Tony said.
So in today's world, you can't do that. I don't know what Tony's going to say. He could say something
No matter what he says, it's going to be amazing. No. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be like, toughen the fuck up. Swallow, like, just like...
Swallow?
Swallow, gay man.
Okay.
I was say, like, swallow your... No, that did not. Yes. Something... He'll say something.
So we're just supposed to trust Tony.
Just be like, oh, yes, do that. That was great advice.
Interesting advice, Tony. I'm going to think about that. I didn't commit.
You're resentful.
Don't commit. Don't commit, Molly. Yeah. They'll use it against us.
Look at you, Tony. Tony doling it out.
Tony.
Tony, only you could have said that.
Tony,
only you could have said that. Tony, I never thought of it that way before, Tony. I'm going to think about it.
You're such a Tony. Like you're Tony.
Oh gosh, Tony.
Okay. All right.
Is that enough?
That was great.
Tony. It's like 1991 up in here.
He's an Italian.
Remember the band Tony?
I
are we getting my joke?
No, I thought you were making a reference to Who's the Boss. Who's the Boss, Tony?
Oh, I know. I didn't even think about that.
Tony Danza.
I forgot about Tony Danza.
Who needs Tony Braxton performing when we got you, Tony?
Well, Tony Danza. What'd you say?
Who needs Tony Braxton when we got you, Tony?
Let me do it one more time without anybody interrupting it so she has clean audio.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, who needs Tony Braxton performing when we have you, Tony? Screw you, Agua Caliente. I want a refund.
Natural laugh.
Yeah, it's not as funny now that I redid it.
I think she should play the first version.
I'm going to keep both. I think it's pretty amazing that you just did that.
I love it.
All right, well, thanks for doing this.
Thank
this was
you, Kristen.
Fun.
I feel like I learned so much from you, Jason. You're so insightful.
Yes, you are very insightful.
I really was an oracle today.
The oracle
came out.
You're like the next Oprah.
But I don't even want to say
I
were.
I basically am Oprah.
You are an oracle.
That's what social media has become my final thought. Everyone trying to be Oprah. Oprah was social media before social media.
Totally.
She was the only way celebrities could look good. You had to go on Oprah. But now everyone's tried to usurp her, and it's so desperate and pathetic.
On that note, you guys have been a joy. So thank you for listening to the show. Please rate and comment, and I would really appreciate it. And also, If you want to support the show, please go to patreon.com/mentallychill. And by support the show, I mean support me. It's just, I'm more comfortable saying support the show rather than support me, because it's like weird to just feel like you're sending someone money. Anyway, thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, share the show with a friend, follow Molly and follow Jason on their social media. And so where can people find you guys?
You know, it's going to take me a minute. So okay. They'll find me soon. You'll find me on Yelp.
Okay.
And I don't know what my handle is, but you know.
Yeah, find her Yelp reviews. You'll love the way she complains. It's kind of like the Men's Warehouse. Like, you'll love the way you look.
You'll love the way she complains.
It's all Jason Romaine. I own it all. So don't even fuck with me, Kylie Jenner. You know, I own Jason Romaine. She tried to steal from Kylie Minogue. I don't know if you know this.
Did she lose?
I think she lost that. Kylie Minogue was first. But jasonromaine.com, Jason Romaine, you know, for Instagram, Twitter. And then I also have a web series making fun of this thing called Soho House. If you don't know about it, then you don't matter.
Oh, I've seen it. It's so funny.
Yes. And Molly, you haven't been in it yet, but your husband's been in it. And Krista, I need to get you in it when I do a third season. But there's two seasons of that you can find off jasonromaine.com.
And it's the funniest thing ever.
Yes.
Yeah. And I should mention MP's thing as well, because both Jason, Molly, and I are in it. And so if you guys want to see the three of us, we're all in different sketches, but you should go to scottfromsanfrancisco.com.
Yes.
And
Mary Patterson B. is her Instagram handle, and Scott from San Francisco is the web series.
It's very adorable.
It's a funny web series. It's very funny. All in it.
Yeah, so you guys should check it out. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening and for being you. And remember, stay bored enough to listen, but not too bored. Bye, guys.
What do you think here? When do you think I should tell someone I'm dating that I'm depressed? Well, I think I'll tell you this. I dated broads that were depressed. It's fucking exhausting. Just put on a smile, put on a little makeup, you know, hit the powder room, do your thing. Come on, you'd be surprised. You put a little, you know, toilet water, whatever, the perfume on there, you know, a little rouge. It's unbelievable. You feel like a brand new person. You look beautiful. So there you go. That's one right there.
Interesting advice, Tony. I'm going to think about that. I didn't commit.
You're resentful.
Don't commit. Yeah, don't commit, Molly. Yeah. They'll use it against us.
Look at you, Tony. Tony doling it out.